listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
January 6, 2018. I hope that everyone had a wonderful Christmas and a happy New Year celebration. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the sunny but chilly Chicago suburbs. In fact, my office, the insulation in my office, it's kind of in the front of the house, and it's really, really cold in my office. It's about 55, and so when it's cold outside, my office is 55, so I'm sitting here with my near-infrared sauna right next to me. So everything's cool, or warm. Anyway, thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. Please visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net and WoolliesBlog.blogspot.com and ScreeningSandyHook.com. .net. I've posted quite a bit of information there in the last few weeks. Now, during the program today, email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. Visit the chat room at spingola.chatango.com. You may also visit the guest lineup or view our guest lineup at spingola.com. That's a lot of websites to throw at you, but they're all kind of important, so I hope that you will visit them. In addition to the links for each guest at spingola.com, I have other interesting links relative to the guest and his or her subject. We're going to have open lines for the whole 3 hours today, and you may call in with questions or comments at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Cynthia A. Sandor, S-S-A-N-D-O-R, and she is the author of Through Innocent Eyes, The Chosen Girls of the Hitler Youth. Her websites are CynthiaSandor.com and BDMHistory.com. She has a Facebook page under author Cynthia A. Sandor. All righty. Cindy, how are you?
Well, hello, Deanna. It is such a pleasure being on your show today. Thank you.
Well, it's always wonderful to chat with you and to have you on the program. And you have a wonderful book, and which I've read, and it's very interesting. And let me just grab it here. Anyway.
Thank you. I have some exciting news to share with you, if I may.
Oh, please do.
All righty. Since the initial release of my book was published with a company out in California, I have since started my own publishing company, and the brand new release will be available on March 1st. And it will be available, of course, on Amazon. But the nice thing about this, it's going to be available internationally in England, in Australia, all over the world, in France, you name it. And I'm doing it under my own publishing company.
Amazing. And just does not surprise me a bit that you
yeah, really.
That you would do this. Because that's the kind of personality that you are. You're just a real go-getter. And now, how did you get all the translation work done?
Well, this took me a very, very long time to get my mom's journal translated and then find the leadership pamphlets from the time and other documents from that era and have them translated. And the nice thing about it was that my neighbor, who has since passed away, Irma Rosich, she helped me over an entire year to translate my mother's journal and to translate all the documents from German into English for me. And so
wow.
I went to her house. Yeah, I went to her house like practically every single day. And we would, you know, we first took the journal, and when I showed it to her, Irma said, you need to write a story about your mom. And I said, Irma, who's going to read a book about a girl on a farm? Well, boy, was I wrong. It was so much more than that. And she said, Cindy, I grew up during this time. This is my story. And I asked her, I said, well, okay, you're encouraging me to write the book. Can you take the time to help me research it? And let's work on this together. And she said, absolutely. And that's what we did.
What a wonderful thing. But
yeah.
In having this book available all over the world in different languages, how will you go about doing that?
Well, there's a few things that you need to do before you publish a book. First, it needs to be formatted correctly and to the standards of the book industry. And that took me about 4 to 5 months to complete. So as a self-published author, instead of paying the thousands of dollars that publishers, self-publishing companies want to publish your book and then throw it on Amazon and hope to get a snippets from the royalties, I'm going directly to Ingram Sparks, and I'm uploading all of my material onto their server, I guess you call it, and then what they'll do is they'll go ahead and take my documents and then put them into book format and into an ebook format. I have to send them the material, the book covers, the inside of the book, and then they'll go ahead and print the book for me. They'll print a hardback copy of the book, paperback copy, and they'll also have it available as an ebook.
But your neighbor initially translated your mother's journal into English.
Yes.
How are you going to have your book translated into Spanish and French and Russian and those languages?
This is all going to be in English, and the book was totally re-edited. And
okay.
It's actually shorter than the book that was printed by my original publishing company.
Okay.
And it's the first release is all going to be in English. Now, I've hired a German translator who lives in Ireland, and she's translating the book into German for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so once when I receive her translation in German, I need to reformat the book, make sure everything is correct, and then have someone else edit the book to make sure that it's grammatically correct, and then submit that into Ingram and get all new ISBN numbers for the German translation, and then that's going to be available in German.
Okay. All righty. Great. So, the fact that you found your mother's journal and that it's not just your mother's story, but a lot of women's stories.
Yes.
And she did, your mother passed away from bone cancer, and you found the handwritten journal. And what really inspired you to write your mother's biography? Was it just your neighbor, or did you have something, kind of an inkling that this is something that maybe your mother wanted you to do?
You know, I when I first found her journal, I found it 4 months before she passed away. And when I looked through the journal and I saw my mom's name written in there, and I was flipping through the pages, and it was all written in the German Sutzman script and in Fraktur, and it had her photos in there. I had no idea at that time that I would write the book. Now remember, I found the book 4 months before she passed away, which was in 1989. And it wasn't until 2010 to 2011 that I spent an entire year with Irma actually writing the book. So there was a very long time span, about a good 23, 24 years in between, where there was very little information available on the girls that were in the Bund Deutsche Mädel. And Irma was the one who really inspired me to write the book and give me that spark inside to say, you can do it, I know you can. And to be able to take my mother's journal and then go back and even speak with my family, because during that time I would go to Europe and spend time with my family, and I would bring the journal with me. And my aunts and my uncles, they would go through, my cousins, they would go through and say, what do you have here? And I would show them the journal, and they would start reading it, because my aunts could definitely read the writing that was in there. And they were very curious about it, because they didn't know that my mom had kept this journal. And what was nice was that they had casually mentioned, oh, wouldn't it be nice if you could write a story about your mom or something like that? And I just kept putting it off, putting it off, putting it off. And then something came inside of me where I said, you know, I really need to share this story. And let me see if I can write a book and do something with it. And if even one person bought the book, at least my mom's life would have some meaning. She wouldn't have died in vain, so to speak. And this would probably open up a whole new world for maybe something I can share to people to say, you know, this is what happened in country service year camp. This is what life was like back in the 30s and the 40s for in Austria. And I was really just trying to get an understanding of my mom and her life growing up, because I knew nothing about this part of her life until I found her journal. So it really piqued my interest to know more about my mom and what she went through during that time.
So she really never discuss this with you as you were growing up?
No, you know what? Every time my mom and I and my dad, we would always, you know, every year go to Europe. And my mom would always tell me this story. So this is the house I was born in, and this is the house I grew up in, and this is my little village, and this is where I went to school, and we would hike up the Reisalpe mountain and go up to the guest house up on top and get something to eat, or stop by on the middle station there and have something to eat. And she would always tell me stories everywhere we went in Linz. This is where I met your father. And she would tell me the stories about how she met my father and where they would go. And then we would go into Gmunden, Austria, and where they had lived. And she would say this was the apartment, because we walked all over the place. And she was kind of reminiscing about her time after the war, I would think, and where she grew up. And she would tell me all the stories. You know, this is when your dad and I got married, we moved here, and this was we had an apartment up on the third floor, and your dad would be out fishing, and this is where I would be sleeping all morning long. So she shared all the stories with me every time we went there. But she never said, yeah, I was in the League of German Girls, and this is what I did. So she kind of scooted around it a little bit, and it didn't all come together until I found her journal and showed it to her in the hospital. And I was bursting at the seams. I said, Mom, where's this house? Who are these girls? What are you doing? You know, can you read it? Did you write it? And she said, of course, I was in the Hitler Youth. And then it all slowly started coming together. It was amazing.
Wow. Yeah. Now she lived, your family lived in Austria?
My entire family on my mother's side lives in Austria, yes.
Okay.
And that was her brother and sister, and we would go back and visit them. And then that's where I had my mom buried, in the family grave over in Obdekirke, which is not far from Kleinsel. And when I would go over after my mom's passing, I would go and visit my aunt and my uncle and spend time with them. And my uncle Franz would tell me stories about his time of what happened when he was in the Hitler Youth, because now it's out. And then it seems like the door started opening up every time I went there. They would tell me a little bit more and a little bit more. But my aunt, Dantinita, not so much. Not so much. She still wanted to kind of put it off to the side. And it wasn't until about 20 years after my mom passed away that I found out why.
Now, what year did your mother pass away?
My mom passed away in November of 1989.
Okay.
And then the book wasn't published until 2012.
1989. And how old was she when she passed?
She was 61 years old.
Okay.
It was just before her 62nd birthday.
Huh. Now, okay, so let's, again, the name of the book is Through Innocent Eyes, The Chosen Girls of the Hitler Youth. And it's amazing that she never mentioned this to you before until you found the journal. And what a time for her to, what an opportune time for her to tell you right before she passed.
And I remember that conversation we had in the hospital when I showed her journal. And when I handed her the journal, her entire disposition changed. She adjusted herself in the bed, and I could see her eyes like light up, and they started sparkling. And she was like remembering a time that made her feel real good when she was younger. And I handed her the journal, and she just started flipping through the pages and reminiscing about this time. And I'm standing there, and I'm just bursting at the seams. And I'm like, Mom, okay, where's this house? Who are these girls? What are you doing? Can you read it? Did you write it? And she closed the journal, and she looked at me. And she said very proudly, of course I can read it. I wrote it. I was in the Hitler Youth.
Wow.
And it just shocked me. And then she pointed her finger at me and she said, don't show this book to anyone because they'll kill you.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm like, okay. And I said, okay, well, tell me what's in the book. And she said, well, it doesn't matter anymore because I'm dying anyway, so I might as well just tell you. So it was nice because even though she was dying from bone cancer, it was very painful. We spent some nice hours upon hours together. And every day she would tell me a little bit about her book and what she did. And she was explaining things to me about her camp and her workplace and her friends that she had in her, it was like a dorm, the home in Poland. It's still there today, and it holds could hold 40 people in the home, and it's a bed and breakfast at the moment, and Marguerite owns it. But I was very grateful to have had the opportunity to spend the last remaining days with my mom, and she opened up and she told me about growing up in Kleinsel, Austria, when she was in the League of German Girls, which is priceless.
That is just amazing that you were able to communicate with her at such a crucial time in her life. Mm-hmm. And be able to explain this. So how did you react when she told you that she was in the Hitler Youth?
Well, I was in total shock. I'm thinking, what? My mom is in the Hitler Youth? Are you kidding me? And I didn't know. All I knew about at that time was the Hitler Youth, the boys. I didn't know about the girls in the Hitler Youth. And
okay.
I had no idea there was the Bund Deutsche Mädel.
Wow. Okay, we are going, I have to catch up, but we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Welcome back. Our guest today is Cynthia A. Sander. She is the author of Through Innocent Eyes, The Chosen Girls of the Hitler Youth. It is a wonderful book, and I hope that you will read it. It's really very, it has a lot of heart in it. It's just a wonderful book, a terrific book. And who knew? I mean, your mother certainly didn't know that so many people would be reading it.
Exactly. I wish she was here today because I would be dragging her to every single World War II reenactment that I go to. And it's nice because over the years I've met quite a few German women here that have were in the BDM. And there's like a kindred spirit there where we kind of connect and we talk. There's a nice bond, a relationship that we form. But yeah, it's, and never in my wildest dreams would I have thought that the reaction would be so positive, about this. And not only that, there's a company in Chicago, actually, a film company that is interested in making the book into a movie.
Oh, so fabulous.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
And they are in the pre-production phases, and I'm like third in line because they have quite a few other movies that they're working on right now, but they want to keep the book in its entire authenticity, and they're not going to change anything in it. They said, Cindy, we have a 4-hour movie here, and I went, okay, so let's just kind of chop it down and just have the highlights in the book, I guess. So that's what they're working on, and there's a whole procedure that goes along with it, and it does take quite a few years to put together a movie. So it just doesn't happen overnight, you know, it takes quite a long time. So, I mean, that is in itself, never in my wildest dreams would I have thought after I published the book that somebody would actually be interested in making a movie on it. And I mean, I'm just so excited about that.
Well, that is very exciting news. Now, when you were talking with your mother, about your reaction to what she told you, and she said, I'm dying and it doesn't matter anymore. And then she said, not to tell anybody, not to show the book to anybody because they will kill you. What did you think that she meant by that?
You know, I don't know really what she meant by that at the time. And I'm just thinking that maybe the reason why she never said anything about it was because there's so much controversy on the subject, on the Hitler Youth. Because, and even with the girls in the BDM, everybody thinks that they were only taught to breed as many children as possible, which is farthest from the truth. So there's like maybe she thought there was a stigma attached to it. I have a friend of mine who was born in Nuremberg in 1945, and she came to the States, and when she told everybody she was German, oh, she got spit on. They beat her up. It was so horrible for her. And growing up in the States after she told everybody she was born in Germany. And even now looking back at it, I still try to ask myself, you know, is it something she was afraid of? Why did she keep this hidden from us all these years? Why did she say something only until the time before she passed away? You know, the questions still go through my mind. And when I do my book signing events, there are some people who come up to me and try to insult me. And I'm like, that's your opinion? And I educate them about what the girls learned when they were in the League of German Girls. And the entire program was to educate the girls, not really to become productive members of society, right? So as my mom was thinking, don't show this book to anyone because they'll kill you, she was probably protecting me in some way. But what it was really, I don't know.
Well, I do know, in talking with other people, even in Canada. Oh, okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll pick this up on the other side. Be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And I was talking about some of the, well, propaganda that was spread even before World War I, because you cannot get the American public or possible people who would be recruited into the military to want to fight against a bunch of strangers unless they feel compelled to do so. And so there was a lot of propaganda before World War I against the Germans as a nation, the German people. And I remember that the gentleman that started Justice for Germans, the website Justice for Germans,
right,
wrote to me several times, and you're familiar with that website.
Yes,
and
I am.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I am familiar with the website. I completely forgot about it, yes.
But he used to tell me that he was beaten up at school. Even the teachers were prejudiced against him. And I just felt so bad. And I know that this is the way that people look at others, and I just don't think that, well, of course it's wrong. We shouldn't hate any group of people.
Mm-mm. No, not at all. Not at all. And that's how my mother thought. Absolutely. And you see, people, I don't know, I found in my journey that there's the people like to pass judgment automatically instead of getting all the facts and state their opinions, and a lot is based, I think, upon how they're brought up. And the way my mom brought us up was to treat everybody with respect, treat your elders with respect, address them when you first meet them, you know, as Mr. and Mrs., and then let them say whether or not they want to be called by their first name or not. But yes, and I think still to this day, there's something still out there.
I agree. Absolutely.
And it's important that before we pass any judgment on anybody, that we get all the facts of the situation first, whatever it might be, and take it from there. I found it in relationships. I found it in the workplace. I found it in just going to the grocery store. You know, standing in line, and they're like, well, why do they only have one cashier? You know, why don't they have five or six? There's a line a mile long, and I'm like, well, we don't know what the situation is. So let's just deal with it right now and handle it the best we can. But even when I'm at my book signing event, some people come up to me, and not only me, at other reenactors, they just start putting them down, and I'm like, no, this is part of living history. The people who do this put their time and energy to educate the people.
You're right. And I was, as you were talking, we have been taught to be critical and to judge and to be cynical and to evaluate things without even thinking about why. About why these things might be the way they are. And that's really too bad. And I think that we've also, rather than being cooperative with people, for instance, a classroom of students, they learn to be competitive, which competition is good, but I think you should only compete with yourself and to try to be your best self, not to best somebody else.
Exactly.
And wow.
And it's working together with people also.
Right.
And coming together if it's in whatever situation it might be. But yes, people are fast to be critical that a situation that comes up, or you know, even in the family. I was talking with a woman today, and she was having some issues, and I didn't pass any judgment on her, and I was just listening to her and trying to help her in the sense that trying for her to help her make sense of the understand what's going on in her family, because right away everybody has this attack mode. Everybody attacks everybody, and I'm like, just slow down, take a deep breath, and take a step back.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Now, when you decided to write the book, despite what your mother said, you decided that you wanted to write the book Through Innocent Eyes. I think it's a great title, Through Innocent Eyes. Now, your mother did not really have a formal school education. And so she had a different experience because of the war and because of the situation where she was living. So what did the Hitler Youth provide for her in order for her to become who she became?
Well, my mom was in March of 1938. My mom was living in Kleinzell, and Austria was annexed into Germany. My mom was only 10 years old at that time.
And they voted for this annexation. I think it was 99% that Austria wanted to be part of Germany. Okay, go ahead.
Exactly. Yes, because they saw how Germany was coming up, because Hitler was chancellor, and he raised the country up, their economics, and Austria was still in an economic chaos. So they wanted to become part of Germany. And as my mom was 10 years old, it was mandatory for her to join the Young Girls League, which was called the Jungmädelbund. And there was two things she had to do before she could even go into the Jungmädelbund. And that was, first, she had to undergo a complete medical examination proving that she was of pure German descent and that she had no health issues. And then once she passed the medical examination, she had to prove herself both in character and in her physical abilities by passing the preparatory service and the Jungmädel challenge. Now, the preparatory service consisted of three parts, and my mother had to attend lectures about her tasks, duties, and the responsibilities of becoming a Jungmädel. And then she had to attend one social evening meeting and participate in this sports afternoon, which tested her courage. And that was in April 1938, because all the kids were indoctrinated on April 20th. And then when she passed the preparatory service, she would then start on her Jungmädel challenge. And now, remember, she was 10 years old, so the girls had 6 months to prepare for their Jungmädel challenge. And they had to do what was called a performance test and an agility test. And they had to participate in a one-day hiking trip. And every day these girls practiced for their tests. And in the performance test, there were three challenges, which is, I guess, very simple, because first they had to run 196 feet in 14 seconds or less.
Wow.
I don't ever remember doing that as a kid, but I've never timed myself recently. But they also had to jump 6.5 feet from a standing position and throw a heavy leather ball at least 40 feet. That was just in the performance test. In their agility test, they had to learn how to roll forward 2 times and stand up without using their hands.
Wow.
And then do 2 backward rolls and stand up again without using their hands. Then they also had to learn how to jump through a swinging rope, what we know as jump roping.
Right.
And then lastly, they had to participate in a one-day long hiking trip. And during that time, their all the results were, they were timed, and all the results were written down in their achievement book. And then once when they passed all of their challenges and their performance tests, then on October 2nd in a formal ceremony where they were confirmed as full members of the Young Girls League. At that time, they were officially given the right to wear their black neckerchiefs and their leather knots.
Now, would you compare, how would you compare this to Girl Scouts today? Or
well,
would you?
I'm going back from memory. I was in the Brownies for one year, and you know, wore the little brown outfit with the sash, and then we had this ceremony where we had to walk over this bridge, look down at a mirror, excuse me, and then recite this oath, and then walk over the bridge, and then we became Girl Scouts. And then I was in the Girl Scouts for 2 years after that.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Oh, no, I was going to say there's some people that when I meet at my book signing events, that they didn't even know the girls were in the Hitler Youth. And the easiest way I can relate it to explain the divisions is that the Jungmädel is like the Brownies and the Bund Deutsche Mädel is like the Girl Scouts. To put a connection there. And then afterwards, that started their training. Now when the girls were in the Jungmädel Bund, they started off learning about their Germanic, their culture, folklore, and stories. They were learning about the Brothers Grimm fairy tales, Germanic gods and heroes. That was like the first year. And then in the second year, they learned about the figures of their past. And then by the third year, they were learning about the men and women that were battling for Germany. And it wasn't until the fourth year in the Jungmädel Bund that they started learning more about the details about Adolf Hitler and Rudolf Hess and Horst Wiesel and Hermann Göring. And all along the way that they were learning, that was their education, they were learning new songs, they were developing their arts and crafts. And so that they were learning how to sew, they were making banners, and then by the end of their fourth year, they had the opportunity to give their first big life performance, so to speak, in front of their village. And the Kasperl play is one of the most serious types of young girl playing, so to speak, which is actually still performed in the elementary schools today, because it teaches, it combines the free spoken word, and it helps the girls use their imagination by placing themselves directly in the story. And they were told about the characters in Kasperl. And you have Kasper and his good friends, Gretel and Seppel. And there's a police officer, a robber, a wizard, a crocodile, a grandmother, and the devil. And then there's the king. And it was up to them to write the script, create the screen, the scenes, and act out their parts. So the child's creative imagination would awaken, because they would design the performance, they would design the characters, and this would increase their self-esteem and their confidence. And so I came across a book by Reinhold Sauter called The Experience of the Great Camaraderie, and he mentions that performance and singing are a very essential component in the development of the girls' upbringing in the Young Girls League. So the Young Girls League was more of a playtime for them, and each year built upon the next to awaken their creative imagination and to educate them through, for instance, puppet plays or shadow plays or performances, singing performances that they would give.
Well, that's an amazing amount of things to engage in, and it seems that they kept the young girls busy in really good things. They were exercising, developing their physical strength. And I was just, as you were talking, I was thinking about the educational system that we have now in America, and I'm just flabbergasted. Well, I shouldn't be, but I am, because it just
I've been out of school for a very, very long time, and all my friends' kids are grown up. And the one thing that a conversation that continually comes up at my book signing events is when I tell people about my book, you know, they say, why don't we have a program like this in the United States? We have the Brownies and the Girl Scouts, and we have the 4-H Club. So this is just one part of the educational system, because my mom did go to school. She was in regular kindergarten and grade school. So they went to school one day a week, and the Jungmädelbund girls had their meetings were held like every Wednesday in the afternoon after school. So they would go to school from whatever, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, and then get out by 2, and then they would go to their meetings for a few hours, and then they would go home and then help their mothers in the house. So when they were in their social meetings, they would also, they were taught how to help their mother in the home. So they had, home economics programs. They were being taught how to sew, how to embroider, how to crochet. They were given practical home economic skills in the Jungmädels. Remember, they were very young, 10, 11, 12, 13. Mm-hmm. And by the age of 14, they went into the Bund Deutsche Mädel, which was the League of German Girls.
Mm-hmm.
But they sang a lot of songs. When you talk to any German woman now, she said they loved singing songs.
Yes. All righty. We are going to go to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Tiana. And our guest today is Cynthia A. Sandor, the author of Through Innocent Eyes, The Chosen Girls of the Hitler Youth. Her website is CynthiaSandor.com and BDMHistory.com. Her Facebook is under author Cynthia A. Sandor. And remember that we have open lines during the entirety of the program today. You may call in at 800-313-9443. I was thinking, too, that the moral culture, as I compare what was occurring with this group of girls, this group of young women, the moral culture in this country is so drastically different than what they experienced in that program. And there's just no way to... For instance, I was a Girl Scout leader for a short period of time when my daughter was in Girl Scouts. Yes, I always, whatever my kids were interested in, then I participated. And we did learn things, but not in the depth that you're talking about. Usually when people think of Girl Scouts, they think of Girl Scout cookies. Which really, that's the only thing that you can correlate to Girl Scouts nowadays, is that I think once a year they go around and sell cookies and, well.
Capitalism.
Yeah, or something. Corporatism, something like that. But, as far as learning real skills, we didn't do that. Of course, I had to follow the program as outlined and, this is very interesting. And they really did develop, they didn't just develop one part of their character, but they developed everything. They helped, no, they didn't develop. They helped the girl to develop the best that was in her.
Absolutely. They absolutely, because when you're talking about what my mom learned, you know, 70 some odd years ago to what is being taught in the schools today is vastly different, because let's take a moment and go back into time and think about what was life like growing up. Now, they didn't have cell phones. They didn't have ovens or microwaves. It was a more physically intensive life, and people depended upon each other. Now, my grandmother lost her husband, and it was my grandmother with her five children. So that had something to do with it, too, because everybody in the family had to work together and help each other out. I couldn't just say, well, I didn't want to go, and I'm sorry, my little chihuahua is barking. But they wanted to, my mom wanted to learn. She wanted to be the best that she possibly could be. She loved being in the League of German Girls because it brought her such a sense of camaraderie, fellowship, and it helped to her to, inside of her to awaken those creative skills that she had inside of her. I mean, she learned how to go skiing. She was becoming mature. At first, you know, the girls were having fun in the Jungmädel, and it was all like more like playtime, because even in the Jungmädel, they were teaching the girls nutrition and proper eating habits.
That's wonderful. That's terrific. Yes. Mm-hmm. All righty, we are at the top of the hour. We will be right back after a break. Right.
Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Cynthia A. Sandor, the author of Through Innocent Eyes, The Chosen Girls of the Hitler Youth. Her websites are CynthiaASander.com and BDMHistory.com. Her Facebook page, she's under author Cynthia A. Sandor. And this book is very provocative. It makes you think about life, and it makes you consider the personal goals that people should have, and it just makes you think a lot about everything. And it's just very interesting. And I think, wouldn't it be wonderful if every child had an opportunity to participate in something like this, where they would really, really learn to be productive and not just have a handout to the state, you know, gimme, 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 but to be productive and to participate as a productive member of society. Why did the Third Reich place so much emphasis on sports?
Well, they place so much emphasis on sports because it was, excuse me, for them to, first of all, come together in camaraderie and to build the fellowship together with the kids. And then they encouraged the girls, they were always encouraged at all times to become that the very best that they were, they can be. It was up to the troop leaders to encourage the girls and give them that inner drive to succeed, Now gymnastics, they were learning gymnastics, calisthenics, and that gymnastics focuses on the muscle, the strength, and the agility and the mental capacity with the emphasis on the joy of movement. And when you look at it this way, in our imagination, let's take a group of children, 10 years old, group of girls, and let's teach them that exercising is fun. And look how much fun they can have together doing it as a group. And you raise them with that mindset to always eat healthy, to move, to take care of your body. They were taught personal hygiene. And that will go from them when they're young into their adolescence and into adulthood. And that's why when we look at so many photos and the movies of the girls in the Bund Deutsche Mädel, there's not too many things really out there with the Jung Mädel. There is, but there's more on the girls in the Bund Deutsche Mädel. But you see in every photo, the girls are healthy, they're slim, they have good complexion, they take care of themselves. We need to move. My aunt would always say, move you. And she got that when she was in the Bund Deutsche Mädel herself, because they were always doing something. They were always moving. And sports was so important because it gave them the discipline inside that if they could have a goal, let's say of running 196 feet in 14 seconds or less, that's a big accomplishment for them. Or if they can do the two rolls forward and backwards and stand up without using their hands.
Mm-hmm.
As a beginning, because later on, as they went into the BDM, they always did sports every single day. That was part of their life. So when you put that into a child's mind, they will have it with them every single day.
Right. For the rest of their lives. They're going to be active.
Absolutely, and even when I was growing up as a kid, you know, my mom said, she goes, go outside and play. Okay, so we were outside all day long. We didn't have to worry about anything. We would be out building forts and climbing trees.
That's what I did.
Yes.
and we came home when it was time to eat, and then if it was still daylight, we went out again. I lived in California, and the weather was great, and we could be outside all the time, and I was playing basketball, jumping rope, playing badminton, just always doing something.
Always.
And it was
bicycle
wonderful.
Riding, hiking,
yes.
In the woods, you know, you name it. My parents, they didn't worry about us because we had a group of kids in my neighborhood. Now, mind you, I grew up in the backwoods of Greenwich, and so my friends were about a half a mile away from me, so we had long distance to walk to our friend's house. But when we got together, the parents were fine with that, and we would go exploring in the woods and find forts and old abandoned buildings and clean them up, make little houses out of them, you know. But we used our creative imagination. We didn't have a cell phone. We didn't have iPods or whatever. We were always active.
And we weren't fat.
Oh, no, not at all.
We weren't fat. My parents never drove me anywhere. If we wanted to go somewhere, we walked.
Yeah,
and it didn't matter how far away it was.
Yes.
We walked.
Yes.
And it was okay.
Oh. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah, back then, you know, in the 60s growing up, it was different. I mean, when my mom was in the hospital with her breast cancer, I was in junior high school, and she was at the hospital, which was a good 5 miles or so away. And I skipped school, and I hitchhiked and got a ride and went to the hospital, and everything was okay. Mm-hmm. And so my mom said, how did you get here? I said, well, I just hitched a ride with someone. Oh, okay. You know, it wasn't like this what's going on in today's world. But yeah, even at school, after school, the kids would get together, get off at the bus stop, throw our books at home, and then go outside and play. We were always active.
Right.
And even in the wintertime, we would be out skiing, sleigh riding, you know, in the summer playing cowboys and Indians. And
yeah, I did that too. I was always the Indian.
Yeah. I've got pictures of my sister and I dressed up as Indians. Yeah.
I always took the underdog side of everything. Yeah. I've been skeet shooting and doing things that children don't do now.
No.
I used to go skeet shooting with my brother and his friends, and gosh, it was a wonderful, wonderful time.
It was. And even my mom had a garden and in the backyard, because we had a pretty big backyard there. And I remember I was probably 4 years old, and this is how she instilled work ethics in me, okay? This was her thinking. So she said, you want to go outside and play with me in the dirt? Oh, yeah, of course. So I went outside with her. We went into the garden, and she's growing her tomato plants and her beautiful pepper plants and whatever else she had out there. And she said, okay, you see these little trees? Just very gently pull them out around the base of the plant and pile them up here. Oh, okay, so I'm a happy camper. I'm outside with my mom. Well, I didn't know I was weeding the garden.
Well, you have to make it fun for children in order to...
Yeah.
To really help them to understand. And it's really nice to do something like that with your parent.
It is. And so many people live in the suburbs now, and not everybody goes outside and grows a, what do they call it, a victory garden or something, or wants to learn after working a full day work. Both parents are working, trying to make ends meet, and then they come home, and then they have to take care of the kids. And, I mean, it's rough now.
Oh, the culture has definitely changed.
Yeah, it has, because remember back then the father went to work and the mother stayed home to raise the children. That was what, up until the 50s, 60s?
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't go to work until we all started going to school. And then she only worked a part-time job, and then she was home when we were home. You know, she came home, and then bus would let us off, and we had to walk a half a mile from the bus stop to the house. And then, do her homework and go outside and play until dark. And then she'd be yelling out the window, get inside, it's dinner time, and we didn't want to come inside. We wanted to stay outside and play.
We'd be all sweaty and grimy and...
Let's go downstairs, get those dirty clothes off. I remember. If I can just say, I remember my dad, he was in the Army Corps of Engineers, and when my parents bought their property, they had to clear the woods, and then my dad bought a drag line, and he built this 2-acre lake in our backyard, right on the Byram River there. And in the wintertime, my parents would invite all the kids over from the neighborhood, and all my cousins would come over. And we would have this great big bonfire on the island that my dad made in the lake.
How exciting!
Oh my God, it was so much fun. And when the pond would freeze over, he would go out there and test the ice, and then he would walk all around, and we're all anxiously waiting on the embankment saying, when can we go out on the ice? And then he said, okay, you can go out now. And there would be like 20 kids. And we would all run out on the ice and go ice skating and bring the sleighs there and pull everybody around. And my mom would be inside making the hot chocolate and had the fireplace going in the basement. And, I mean, my parents were so involved with us outside. especially on the weekends. And they were there. They watched over us. They had fun. They were playing with us. They were very much a part of our childhood growing up.
Wonderful.
And, you know, they worked. My parents worked hard. They took them 5 years to build that house. They did it themselves with my father's family. They didn't just go buy a house and pay someone to build it for them. That's how much pride they had. And my dad's family were all carpenters. So it took them that long to clear the land, build the lake, and build the house. And then the whole family would come over, my cousins and aunts and uncles, and on my dad's side, they're all here in the States. And we had some wonderful parties.
Terrific. Wonderful. Oh, that sounds just really great. And people should
fun.
Be to do things like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Build things and mm-hmm. not depend on people to take care of things.
Right. And then in the wintertime, my dad would take us hiking in the woods. So here's my dad and then all these little kids behind him, you know, and my cousins and the neighbor's kids and everything. And we would go hiking in the woods and hop over the river. It was a little stream, river-like, and then he had built a little stone bridge that we would have to cross over, and then we would go over to the golf course there, and we would spend the whole time sleigh riding and up and down the hill all day. And you know how much fun that was and how tired, and, you know, come bedtime, we would all just crash right out. We were exhausted.
But it was fun.
And it was fun.
And you weren't, mm-hmm. everybody wasn't hooked up to their iPad or iPod or computer.
Or their computer or whatever. Their cell phone.
True.
I mean, I don't understand how people can go to work and stay in age and have their earbuds in and listen to music or, watch a video while they're at heavy machinery and not even pay attention to what they're doing. I just don't understand that. And I'm sorry to bring this up, but I don't know if you heard about it. There was this girl that was walking on the train tracks and she had her earbuds in. She was on her cell phone with her earbuds in and she's walking down the train track and didn't hear the train coming.
Oh dear.
I don't know if you heard of that. It was down here, yeah. And she got killed because the conductor, he was blowing the horn and blowing the horn and blowing the horn. And she was right on the train tracks, young girl, and she didn't even hear the train coming.
Well, I think it was very dangerous to be so involved with texting or something as you're going down the street. You make a perfect victim for purse snatching or a number of other crimes.
It's awareness. It's being aware of your surroundings. See, we weren't distracted as kids. We were, I don't know, you know, like you said, you were out playing and having fun. And when you said, okay, let's play Cowboys and Indians. Well, you put together the whole scenario. I'm going to be this. You're going to be that. We're going to get dressed up. This is where you're going to come out from behind that tree. We're going to have bows and arrows and da-da-da-da, whatever else. And you made a whole play around it. And you used your imagination, and that kept you going for hours and hours and hours. We weren't distracted growing up as kids.
That's true.
By artificial intelligence or, you know, and when the only time we were allowed to watch television was when there was a history program on television or my mom would let us watch the cartoons because they played the classical music, you know, Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner.
Yeah,
because that was our introduction to classical music, listening to or watching Bugs Bunny because they were playing the Strauss waltzes. So my mom would say, sure, go watch your cartoons. And then when they're over, go outside and play. And that's what we did. So then when my mom took the record out and put on the Blue Danube, I said, oh, that's the song from Bugs Bunny. Now we put the two and two together. First you hear it on the television in the cartoon, and then you hear the orchestra play it on the record player back then. And she said, then she said this was Johann Strauss's music, and then she would give a little spiel about him, the history about Johann Strauss, and, you know, where he performed in Vienna, and how he played in Schönbrunn Palace, and wow, I didn't know that. So my mom allowed us to explore, and then she would kind of bring us in and ground us and give us a foundation as to what we've learned. She was very open that way. That was really, that was a cool thing, the cool way of that, how she taught us growing up. But
let's
say, oh, go ahead.
Let's go back, and I just think that those are all wonderful things, and she learned how to do that and was a good mother because of her experience. And you talked about in the book about the day-long hiking trip, and you talked in the book about Uncle Franz and and how and what these day-long hiking trips were all about, and why it was so helpful, and what did it do for the girls.
Well, exactly. The day-long hiking trip was part of the preparatory service in the Jungmädel. It was part of the preparatory service. So every month they would take these hiking trips up around the area or up the Reisalpe mountain. Now, I wrote about the hiking trip in the chapter entitled The Hike on the Reisalpe. And I hiked up on the Reisalpe in Kleinzell with my parents and Uncle Franz. And trust me, this is a very long hike and it's very challenging. But the purpose of the trip was to bring the girls back to nature. So, I mean.
Which is what your parents did with the lake and with doing all these things outside, and what you were doing when you were playing cowboys and Indians. you were involved in nature. Okay, we're going to take a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Cynthia A. Sandor. If you have a question or comment, please feel free to call in at 800-313-9443. Now, children, we're just being children. We're outside playing. We're doing all this stuff, being creative. And no one was put on any drugs. Nobody took.
Oh, my God. No, nobody
Ritalin.
Was on Ritalin. Absolutely not.
Because kids are kids, and that's how kids act.
Right. They have so much energy inside of them. They need a place to release it.
Right.
I remember when my sister had her son. And when I was at home taking care of my mom, this was about a year and a half before she passed away, and my sister would drop off her son and my mom would take care of her grandson. And he loved to, like, just scream. And so my mom said, come with me, Lil. Don't want to say his name. Anyway, we had an apartment above the garage in the house, and so my mom put him in the room there, and it was empty. And she said, okay, now scream all you want. The rooms were empty. So he listened to his own echo. And I said, Mom, what are you doing? She said, I'm just letting him do whatever he wants because he likes to scream and he likes to listen to his echo. And so that's a place for him to go and, do his thing. Now, any other parent or grandparent would probably tell him to shut up and hit him and he's making too much noise. But my mom took that, what he was doing, and said, here, go have fun.
That's incredible.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
So I guess it's a different way of thinking of child rearing. I don't have children. I guess I would have brought them up as my mom brought me up. But no, they were not put on any drugs to curtail their natural childlike enthusiasm at all. And how many times did I interview so many women that they all told me what a great time they had? And then the one thing that they remember the most was that they were always hiking with their friends and they were always singing songs.
That is amazing. That is really nice.
It is, because the Reich's Ministry of Science Education and Culture put together the curriculum for the kids. And they knew that the kids have this natural childlike enthusiasm. And they didn't inhibit their developmental growth of children, but instead they wanted their children to be active. They wanted their children to be creative, and they inspired their children's natural tendencies. If they wanted to sing, then they would sing.
What was that? Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, I heard another voice. I thought, what? Wow.
Oh, that was strange. Okay. That was just me. No, they were not put on drugs. I mean, the kids today, they're put on Ritalin and whatever else to curtail their enthusiasm. I think that's just one of the worst things. And they're diagnosed with every single thing in the book, ADHD and Asperger's and all this. Now, why don't you take their natural personality and then find out what works for them?
I think that too many people view children as just little adults, and they expect them to act like grown-ups. But children are children, and as you say, they should be allowed not to run wild, of course, but to develop and to be curious and to learn.
Mm-hmm.
That's what children are supposed to do.
Well, I think, and I've heard this from so many parents over the years, it's like they have a very active child. Well, this one couple I know, they went out and bought their son a trampoline. And that's great. Okay. Put him out on the trampoline. He could bounce around. And then within about a week or two, he got tired of that. Okay, so the parents get rid of the trampoline. Now what do? They buy him a skateboard or something. Well, he gets tired of that. So the parents are going in and buying this stuff for the kids, but not giving them the opportunity to develop on it because they're just thrown in the corner and said, here, go play.
Right. All righty, we're going to take a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Cynthia A. Sandor. The number, if you want to call in, is 800-313-9443. And we do have some callers, but I just want to make one comment. So you were talking before we went to the break about parents providing their children with stuff instead of providing them with opportunities to develop their own creative imaginations and create their own stuff.
Exactly. Look at the rearing of the children today. It's like, let me go out to the store, buy you something. Here you go. Now entertain yourself.
Yeah.
And then they get bored. But
sure.
Back then, it was, here we go. Let's all get together as a family and play together. And like the example I gave of when we had our ice skating parties.
Right.
My father was outside with us kids. My mother was inside making the hot cocoa.
Right. All righty. Let's take a call. Let's take Ellen in Florida. Ellen?
Yeah.
Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, my name's Ellen, and I've been listening very, very carefully, and it's very, very interesting. I would like to make 2 points. This, I feel, are very important, and that is what yourself mentioned was knowledge and life skills. And I'd like to focus on this because I believe that today's young people are no longer taught either knowledge, real knowledge. We don't have much of it in the way of education anymore, and life skills. And education isn't just math. It's how to live, how to spend the rest of your life. And also, they tend to disparage you. If someone is trying to excel, then they laugh at you. The culture says don't do those things. And yet the fact is that knowledge determines not only your life, it determines everything you do for the rest of your life. It determines who you meet, what kind of jobs you get. And it's a fact, too, that I don't know about America that much, but savvy parents, and I'm sure even, like, say, maybe the Kennedys and people somewhere like that, send their children to private schools to learn manners. Now, manners are not just some kind of elitist thing. I think manners are courtesy to allow two people to be able to talk to each other, to have your children not entirely run the household. The children know how to behave from beginning day one, and they fall into the pattern of the entire family. And I think these are all the life skills that I sort of perceive are so important at this time in our culture, that this book literally spells them out. I mean, they cover all the bases. They have the sewing on the buttons, and you know, in England, the Queen had to learn how to change a tire in so many minutes. It's not elitist. It's being able to determine the rest of your life, to know how to live sensibly, and how not to maybe make the same kind of mistakes that one sees in today's culture. Now, I would even say that
Ellen, could I just interrupt you? You
yes.
have something going on in the background. Could you turn that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got my TV. I'm sorry. All right then. Well, I want to really finish off with this. It's really important. Is that discipline? Yeah, I've moved away from that.
Oh,
discipline,
good, thank you.
I believe. Yeah, discipline is probably the most important thing that is missing in our culture right now. I mean, we are still the same people. I mean, we may have changed our modes, but we're still dancing the same dance that has gone on forever. We are still the same species, and we still need the same skills that we started out with, and we are not getting them. Our young people are not getting the skills with which to determine their lives themselves. And they're like it's like a person driving a car without brakes. It's that bad. And I would recommend this book, especially to anyone who has children. And also, to the educators, people who you don't have to necessarily, put all this whole political thing aside. What this book is teaching is how to live in a normal society as a human being that you were determined to become. And whether the boys or the girl or whoever you are, you cannot do away with normal life and normal skills. And if you don't have them, you can't live properly, and you make terrible mistakes. And we see it happening now in today's society. And that's really what's on my mind.
Well, Cindy, would you like to respond to Ellen? Thank you so much, Ellen.
Thank you for calling, Ellen, and thank you for reading my book. I appreciate that very much. And you're absolutely right, because right from the very beginning, the children learned discipline. And
that's
that
right.
is a very, very powerful a part of the foundation.
Tool. It's a tool for life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you have it for the rest of your life. And it's just not being self-disciplined. It's being disciplined in every manner of your life. In
yes,
your behavior,
right.
in your thinking, instead of automatically reacting to a situation, you pull yourself back and you think about it before responding. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And
these that is
skills
the
are, it is. And the discipline that I don't see much discipline today. You know, with kids, they talk back to their parents. They don't do their homework. I'm not saying every family does that, because there are some families that really do raise their children, with integrity. And I think that's even a key word mm-hmm. there, because without integrity, how can you function in society? You know, people go around saying, you know, there's nothing but problems in my life. Well, why? You always talk about the things that are happening. Why don't you do something about it? But discipline, even if you're in your job, you have to have discipline.
Absolutely.
I know I have a friend of mine who does day trading, and he's been extremely successful at it. And the one thing he mentioned was how disciplined he is before he makes a trade, before he buys into
mm-hmm.
a stock or before or sells a stock, and how he sits
mm-hmm.
at the computer sitting on his hands before he goes and pushes the button to buy that share. And I thought
that's
that was
right.
very
you
interesting.
Don't just push a button, you know, yeah.
So it's for adults also. Yes,
mm-hmm.
discipline
absolutely.
Is a key factor
Alrighty.
In our life.
Absolutely. Okay, well, thank you so much, Ellen. We do have some other callers.
Okay, well, thank you. And I think you should have this book in every place where there's a child of any age, literally.
Thank you.
They should read it and they should think about it. Thank you very much.
I agree.
Thank you.
I agree. Thank you. Okay, let's take Marty in Idaho. Marty?
Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi. First of all, I would agree with Ellen 100%. I've enjoyed your conversation with Deanna, and I heard you before, and it was good to hear you again. I would like to save up a few nickels and buy your book. I was born in 35, so I'm older. But, you know, I grew up just like you were talking about. It was different then. But I'd like to take a side issue, if I could, and you may not want to answer this question. I grew up thinking, oh, my gosh, the World War, the bombs are coming over New Jersey. We're going to get bombed, and Hitler's dead. And you know, not until I looked at The Greatest Story Never Told. Oh, it was a wake-up call a couple of years ago. So how was your mother aware of the truth of her leader? Were you... as you were growing up, Cynthia?
Of Adolf Hitler?
Uh-huh. Yeah, the truth. Yeah, of him. Or was he a bad boy in your, as you grew up?
As I was growing up, my mother never mentioned anything to, myself about her time growing up in the Hitler Youth. It wasn't only
okay.
until the time before she passed away.
All right.
Before she passed away, and I showed her her journal, and then she opened up. But no, she never said anything. Never. She didn't praise him. She didn't put him down. There was nothing she said.
But I guess you must know the truth now because of Deanna's books and all the other stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Good.
I'm learning. And
okay.
Still
well,
learning.
I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, we all are. Well, I appreciate your. I'm going to try and get your book. Thank you so much.
Okay,
thank you, Marty.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, let's Let's take, thank you, Marty. Let's take Jim in Kansas. Jim, welcome.
The founder of Boy Scouts supposedly got the idea from something he observed in Austria. Did they also, back when this Baden-Powell was observing what he saw in Austria for the boys, did they also have something for the girls during that same time frame? And why are there so many good-looking women that are in Germany? I'll hang up and listen to the answer on the air, or bye.
Yeah. Thank well, you. I don't know. Do you know when the Girl Scouts were started?
I really don't. I know about Baden-Powell, but I don't know when the Girl Scouts started. I suppose we could look it up and find out. But he did ask another question. He said, "Why are all the German girls so pretty?" Or something to that effect. Good looking.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even today, I posted a picture of my cousin on my Facebook page, and she's absolutely drop dead gorgeous, blonde, long hair, skinny as a rail, and she's sitting on this great big rock in the woods. And that's what they do every weekend, at least I know from my family, every weekend they would go outside. After work, they would go home, eat dinner, and then they would go outside for a walk. On the weekends, they would go outside and go to the parks or climb up the mountains. The Austrians are very, very active. And I'm sure that with what the girls learned in the Hitler Youth was they learned proper nutrition. They knew that they had to eat more fruits and vegetables than fats and starches. They were taught personal hygiene, how to take care of their nails, their hair, their body, everything. They were also, taught proper nutrition, and back then, there was no chemicals and preservatives put in foods like we have today. So when my family comes over from Europe and they go to the store and buy a steak and cook it up, and they said, "How come this tastes so different?" And my mom would say, "It was gespritzt," which means they put the steroids in the meat. And I said, "Oh, okay. Well, do you have a farmer here we can get real meat from?" And when I go to Europe, I've got to lose 20 pounds before I get there, because every time I go there, I always come back 20 pounds heavier.
Oh.
Yeah. I swear to God, when you go to Europe and Austria, I've been to Austria so many times, and I go to the local, could be the restaurants or more so the guest houses in the local villages there. The first time I ate forellen, which is rainbow trout. Now, I never, ever, ever ate rainbow trout. My dad loved it.
Oh, so that's really good.
Oh, well, hello. I didn't find out until we went to, when I went over to visit Dantinita and Uncle Franz. So we're at the Lion Guest House, the Golden Lion in Roybach there. And I said, "Well, I think I'll have this forellen, whatever it is." My aunt said, it's fish. Well, they have the fish in their little pond in the stream outside of the restaurant where they keep them in the hatchery, I guess you call them. And the chef went out, grabbed a fish and gutted it and cooked it up right then and there. Fresh fish from the stream in their backyard. That was the restaurant. And they give their animals organic food. They don't give them the corn that has all the chemicals in it. And when you feed your livestock, see, Austria doesn't want all that crap to come in, because even to this day they know that the all the chemicals that are put into the food that are given to the animal goes into the people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want that. So even to this day, they have, you go there and the food tastes so much better. So the girls, when my mom growing up before, World War II, even though World War II was going on, it was still far enough away from her village that she wasn't impacted by it until 1945 towards the end. But my grandmother had her own garden. They had their own livestock. They had their own chickens. And they had their own two pigs. My grandmother, you know, like hens or something like that. And the majority of the people, even to this day, who live in the cities and have condos, and their own apartments, they have areas where the residents can grow their own fresh vegetables, and they encourage it. And anytime I go and visit any of my family, we always go out to the garden and we pick the vegetables off and bring it in and clean them up and have them for dinner. And that's my cousins who are in their 20s to my cousin's friends' parents who are in their 80s. That's the difference. It's the mindset, because they care about their health.
And food in this country used to be safe. And when we used to have independent farmers where they didn't have factory farms, where they isolate these poor animals so they can't even move around, it's horrible. It's inhumane. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. And they don't feed them the right thing. These animals are sick, so they give them a lot of antibiotics, which go into the people who eat that meat. All righty.
Yes.
We will be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is Cynthia A. Sandor. Let me just share a short little email with you. Hi, I love hearing from this guest. I recently got back from a holiday in Rome, and the television in the hotel room had only a few American channels. One of them was the History Channel. As you know, there's a constant Hitler and Germany bashing on that network. That is why it is so important to have books written like your guest has done. Hopefully, her book will open some eyes. And this is from somebody that I really just love. And so thank you for that email.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, I share with you, I found out that the Girl Scouts was started in March 12, 1912 in Georgia, Savannah,
right.
Georgia.
Right. Somebody posted in the chat room.
Oh, okay, yeah, I just looked that up on the computer. But see, a lot of people think that the Hitler Youth started off with Hitler, which is furthest thing from the truth. I think it's getting cold here. My mouth is starting to freeze over. Anyway, and during the German Empire in 1896, they started both the girls and the boys joined together in youth communities. And the very first youth community was called the Young Hikers. In German, it's called the Wandervogel. And it really started off as like a back to nature study group by a grammar school teacher named Hermann Hoffmann. And that would eventually take off to and evolve some 27 years later into the Hitler Youth. But it was the Young Hikers group was established, and that the boys, what they would do was they would distinguish themselves by wearing shorts, the leather shorts and the hiking boots, rather than dressing up in starched shirts and creased trousers like of the middle class. And they greeted each other with the religious salutation, Heil, and at the same time that greeting meant salvation into your soul's health.
Huh.
And from there, it grew into various groups where the youth were leading the youth, and I wrote about that in Appendix A of the Brief History of the Hitler Youth. And it goes on from there and talks about in detail the development of the Hitler Youth. So no, it didn't start with you know, the BDM or the HJ. Yeah, it started years before that.
Okay, now your mother was in a country service year camp, and you say it was kind of like a finishing school. Could you tell us a little bit about the experience, what they did in this camp, and how it prepared them for life?
Well, you know, the school, it's called Landjarlager. The D is pronounced as a T.
Whoops. Oh. We have a top of the hour break. We'll be right back, and you can pick it up on the other side.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Cynthia A. Sandor. She is the author of Through Innocent Eyes, The Chosen Girls of the Hitler Youth. Her websites are Cynthia A. Sandor, that's S-A-N-D-O-R, CynthiaASandor.com, and BDMHistory.com. Her Facebook page is under author Cynthia A. Sandor. Okay, you were talking about the camp that she went to, and this was called the Country Service Year Camp.
Correct. Excuse me. Correct. Yes, it's Landjarlager, Seydorf. She went to the camp Seydorf, and my mother told me that her mother, Josefa, received a letter from the Reich's Ministry that said, based upon her, my mother's accomplishments and her achievements in the Jungmädel, that she was specifically chosen to participate in this elite role educational program called Country Service Year Camp. And it was like a finishing school. And it was an 8 to 9 month long training program that was located in a rural environment very far away from the family home. Now, from Kleinsell to the manor home in Seydorf, and it's in Poland today, it was a 7-hour drive.
Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, and I went all by myself. I rented a little smart car and I went whizzing down the Autobahn at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, you can do that there.
I loved it. And the cars were still passing by me. So it took me seven hours to drive there by myself. I did find it, and It was a wonderful trip going over there, but it took my mom 2 days on a train to get to Seydorf. And they wanted the camps to be far away because they didn't want the interference from the parents. And so it was overseen by the Reich's Ministry of Education, Science and Culture. But the program was originally designed to reduce youth unemployment and to educate the adolescents for possible careers in agriculture and with the girls in home economics. Now, these camps replaced the 9th-year academic curriculum in the school. And these chosen girls had to be physically fit, they had to be in good character standing, and they had to be ready to serve the community and their people at any time. Now, their normal six-day work week started at 6 in the morning, and it ended at 9 o'clock at night.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's 15 hours a day that these kids would get up and do their thing, and then by 9 o'clock at night is when they crashed into bed, and then the next morning they would wake up and do it all over again. So when she went to camp, the first thing they did was they had to fill out their registration form so that the leaders, there were three camp leaders there, that this was a way for them to get to know the children. And my mom told me she had to fill out this form in giving her name, her address, her birth origins, and I'm sure they had that information already on hand. But she was 13 years old at the time, and she had to note all the practical skills that she acquired during her time when she was in the Jungmädel. And that included all of the home economics, her arts and crafts, her musical aptitude, the songs that she learned. And remember, they learned 10 songs a month when they were in the Jungmädel. But she had to put down her religious affiliation, her favorite sports activities, and the awards and the achievements that she received when she was in the Jungmädel. But she also had to note down her diverse knowledge in nursing, first aid, and her physical and athletic abilities.
Wow. And how old was she?
13.
13.
Yeah. And I mean, she knew.
Children now do not even know how to sew on a button.
No. Well, see, this was important because remember going back to the hiking trips? See, mm-hmm. There was no cell phones that they can just call an ambulance and say, come over, get us. You know, if somebody fell and sprained their ankle. They had to learn to take their BDM jacket and make a stretcher out of it. So if they had to carry someone back, they had to, you know, chop down the branches or the limbs off of a tree, put it through their jacket, and learn how to make that so they can carry them back, or tourniquets, or how to deal with dehydration or bruises or whatever may happen, cuts and scrapes and whatnot. So, they had to learn a lot. They had a lot of knowledge before they went into the BDM, but that was what they were taught.
Mm-hmm.
So that once when they were in camp, now in this camp, in Camp Seidorf, which is in Sosnowska, Poland, and the house is still there today, which is really cool. And it's still in its original condition, except for some minor upgrades, which is really cool. But in Camp Seidorf, there were 40 girls altogether, and 20 girls came from the region of Lower Austria, and the other 20 girls came from the Upper Schlesia area in Poland. And the girls were put together in three groups that were rotated. Their positions were rotated every 2 weeks. And then this way they didn't get bored because they were doing the same thing over and over and over again. But there were three groups of these 40 girls, and there was the home economics group, and there was the farming and like the livestock group, and then there was the gardening group. Mm-hmm. And the entire management of the camp was overseen by three camp leaders. And there was Fräulein Dieter, Fräulein Albrecht, and Fräulein Gruber. And the reason why I know this, because I found the house, I met with the owners of the house, and then the owners of the house had the contact information, and you're not going to believe this, for my mom's friends, Ellie, Nellie, Steffi, and Marie, and they were all in the same room together.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
When I contacted them and I told them what I was doing, they just said, oh, my God, I remember your mom. We did this, and they were going back and forth, and it was, and what was nice was, they gave me copies of their journals. And so I gave them a copy of my mom's journal so that we can kind of trade off the information, and after being there and seeing everything, because I spend some time there traveling throughout the area and visiting all the places that my mom wrote about in her journal, it was nice to really put the words of the girl's journal together with the places that they went and what they did.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely fascinating. But getting back to the leaders, the three leaders who oversaw the management of the camp, Fräulein Dieter, she was the troop leader, and it was her responsibility to instill very high expectations in the girls to perform their duties using a military-like disciplinary measures. And what I mean by that is when you're standing at the flag, given the flag greeting ceremony, you know, your chest is out, your back is straight, your arms are right by your side. And when you go marching, you march in sync together as one. It was all taught to be together as one. Now that was, Fräulein Dieter. Then there was, Fräulein Albrecht. She was the camp leader. And she motivated and inspired the girls to learn and willingly perform their duties and to instill a certain code of moral ethics in them. And then Fräulein Gruber, she was the economic and assistant leader, and she oversaw the management of the camp and taught the girls how to manage the home, including the finances. So all three leaders worked in conjunction. Now, it wasn't easy when the girls all got together for the first couple of weeks because some of the girls, I was told, came from Oberschlesien, and that was the Upper Schlesia area in Poland, and they were from the city. So you had the city girls on one side and the country girls on the other, because the country girls came from the Niederösterreich area in Lower Austria. And so you had the different personalities of the girls. Some of the girls didn't want to go out and have to take care of the farm animals, or they didn't want to learn how to wash dishes. So there was, you know, some battling there, and everybody had to figure out their place in the household. But what they would do is every morning they would wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Of course, you know, wash their face, brush their teeth, and dress and run out and have their flag greeting ceremony, you know, where they raise the flag. And then they would eat breakfast and start their work until noon. Now, if the girls were in the home economics group, they were responsible for all the kitchen details, for the cooking, the house cleaning, and all the laundry. Now, remember, there were 40 girls and three camp leaders, and to cook and clean every day was a huge chore. And next, there was the farming and the livestock group, and these girls would help the farmers in their community and on their farms, whether it was planting the potatoes in the spring or taking care of the farmers' livestock or harvesting the fields in the fall. But they would also help the farmers' wives in their homes. And then there was the gardening group, and they just did that. They all came together. They developed like a plan to scale as to where to locate their garden on the property, and noting environmental factors such as like shade and water runoff. And they would cultivate the soil, and you would see pictures of all the girls lined up with their shovels, overturning the soil, and planting the seeds and tending to the garden and removing the insects and fertilizing the soil, because that was their food. That's what they had to survive on. And they would every day go out and pick the vegetables for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and clean them, cook them, and serve them.
Wow. And, amazing. I mean, this is amazing.
Isn't that something? I mean,
yes.
Right, teaching anybody today, put a little garden in your backyard, grow your own tomatoes. How do you do that?
Right.
You know,
a quick
I have a hydroponic
question.
Garden. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, those are very good, too. A quick question. When did your mother come to America, and how quickly did she learn to speak English? Tell us a little bit about that. Why did she come, and how did she come?
My mother came to the States. Now, she married my dad because they met in Linz after the war.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom spoke a very broken English, and my dad spoke a very broken German. So back then you had chaperones.
Oh, was he American? Was he?
Yes, he was an American soldier.
Okay.
He was in the Army Corps of Engineers.
Oh, that's right. You said that. Okay.
Right. Yes. And, he was stationed at the Niblinger Bridge in Linz. It's still there today. There was like a checkpoint Charlie. So on one side you had the Russians and on the other side you had the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And so they met, and then, my mom was chaperoned always by her brother and sister. And because they learned how to speak English, they would translate every single word my dad said, even his marriage proposal.
Oh, have fun.
So they ended up, my parents got married in the Linson Dome. It was partially bombed out at the time. And my father was in the United States Forces, Austria, until 1957. So once when it was over with, they lived in Gemünden for a short time, and then they left on the SS United States out of the port of Le Havre in France and came to the United States because my father was American. And so they came here to the States, and they lived in Glenville, Connecticut for a while. And my mom slowly started learning how to speak the language, and she got a job at HomeLite up in Norwalk, Connecticut, where they make the chainsaws. And my dad was a carpenter, and he was building houses, and that's the whole Sandor family up in Glenville. They're all carpenters, and they have their own, some of them have their own businesses up there where they build these beautiful mansion and houses. It's absolutely incredible. So that's what happened to my mom and my dad. But it took my mom a little while. She never really, really could speak perfect English because, see, German, the language is backwards. So if I were to say something like, I would like to buy the ashtray, please, it would, in German, literal translation would be, I would like to the ashtray, buy, please. So ich möchte die Aschenbecher kaufen, you know, it's like the subject, verb, predicate, subject, modal, verb, predicate, verb. So my mom spoke backwards English, so to speak. And then people said, you talk kind of funny. And I'm like, what do you mean I talk funny? But it wasn't until I went to college and started getting my degrees and going back and learning English all over again that they said, oh, okay, got it. You know, that's where I learned. When I took German in college is when my English was, came along. But, yeah. And my dad never finished school. He never finished high school because he went into the war. He went into World War II.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting back to this camp, when you first started talking about it, you said that they kind of learned that it was a military-like disciplinary kind of a situation. And I could relate to that, but when you think of the military and boot camp, you're there for a purpose. You're there to learn discipline, but you don't mm-hmm. learn life skills. You learn discipline so that you can go and kill people in other countries.
Well, that's different. I mean, these were the
yes,
girls.
Yes, this is really different.
Okay, so this is the girls. The discipline, it's like, if I can share a little story with you that someone told me. Very, very
sure.
dear friend of mine who lives up in Ohio. And she has a very, very dear friend, German lady. And she's in her late 80s now. And she the German lady was the leader for the Cub Scout group, and she taught the Cub Scouts how to march. And when they did their, I guess they had presentations they had to give on their marching skills, she won the award every single year for her Cub Scout group because she taught them how to march like the Hitler Youth did. Which I thought was pretty funny when she told me. And because, anyway, I just wanted to share that with you. But yeah, it was discipline. The upbringing was home economics, arts and crafts. Yes, they were being taught how to become mothers. They were taught child rearing skills. They were taught proper nutrition. They were taught how to cook, how to clean, how to make furniture. My mother made her journal in her arts class. They were learning how to make toys for the children, clothing. They learned how to make clothing from the flax plant.
Amazing.
A lot. Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, we are going to take a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. I guess I really like that music. Okay.
Our guest, yeah, really.
Our guest is Cynthia A. Sandor, and she is the author of Through Innocent Eyes, The Chosen Girls of the Hitler Youth. All righty. We were talking about the camp and what it did for the girls. And really, it just prepared them to be productive members of society. Now, could they have not learned these same things in their home?
I'm sure they did, but this went deeper than that. Now, let's just take a minute to look at the word discipline and what does it mean. It is, it's a training to obey the rules or a code of behavior. I mean, you wouldn't want to be down walking in the street and not paying attention to the signs and then getting hit by a car. Right,
or a train.
Or by a train, yeah. And it's, I don't want to look at the word discipline being negative. It's positive because we need that. And so with the girls, this taught them to have very strong work ethics. And it taught them to stay focused. And this way, Germany didn't allow their girls to become lazy or apathetic. And so I think the government took it upon themselves to teach the kids these work ethics and to be disciplined so that they, when they became adults, they were not dependent upon the government to drain the government from financial resources of social welfare, or becoming so dependent upon the state that they can't function, because that's going to totally destroy a country if you have half of the population. If you have 51% of the population that's dependent and 50% take care of the 51%, that's going to destroy a country.
Mm-hmm.
So they were teaching the girls to take care of themselves, to take pride in themselves.
And also the camaraderie that they learned, which they probably would not have learned at home if they came. Well, you said that some of the children came from the cities, and they probably would not have learned about taking care of animals or gardens or anything like that. So they put them in an environment where they could learn all these various skills so that they could take care of themselves no matter what situation they were placed in.
Right. Exactly. And look at the girls back then that were living in the city. Cosmopolitan lifestyle is what Marie called it. And they were more concerned about their fashion and their hair and makeup than they were about learning about the personal hygiene or self-reliance, if you like to call it. And that this way, they could take care of themselves at all times, and when they became mothers or parents and had children of their own. So it's a natural tendency that you know, I'm not saying that you're going to teach every child, every girl that you're going to learn how to have babies right when you get out of the Bund Deutscher Mädel. No, that's not true, because even when they got out of the BDM, they went into like the Belief in Beauty Society. And then after that, they can go into, becoming, to get married or to go to work.
Mm-hmm. But they were learning things that would help them for the rest of their lives. Now, what you're saying, or what I think you're saying, is that the Third Reich valued their children enough to train them at an early age so that they could become valued members of society no matter what situation they were in. And not only did the children have strong work ethics, they also had a strong sense of will, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, see, the Jungmädel and the BDM leaders were absolutely 100% responsible for teaching and educating the girls to acquire the basic common knowledge skills. And this is how the girls develop their strong sense of will and determination. And the girls were determined to be the best that they could at all times. And this is proof in the film footage and the photos that we see. I mean, even when I talk to the German women who are still alive today, and that when these girls became mothers, they passed down their morals, their principles, their ethics, and their values of which they learned in the BDM. And
As your mother did.
And I'm speaking only for myself because this is what my mom taught me. Now, even when I go to my family.
We have a three-minute break. We'll be right back. And we have Cynthia A. Sandor as our guest. She is the author of Through Innocent Eyes, The Chosen Girls of the Hitler Youth. Her websites are cynthiaasandor.com and bdmhistory.com. And we do have a couple of callers.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take our callers, and then we'll get back to the example that your mother set for you. Okay, we have Russell in Minnesota. Russ?
Thank you so much, Diana, for taking my call. I'd like to add to your guest, the Jewish girls, would they join the organization as well as the other girls? Would all the girls join? Was this a mandatory or was it voluntary? And did you have Jewish girls joining up in there too?
Well, my mom grew up in a little village called Kleinzell, Austria. And it's a very small rural village from a long ways away from Vienna. And from what I understand, there were no Jewish girls in the League of German Girls or in the BDM, and they were not allowed to be a part of the Hitler Youth.
So it was a discriminatory organization then. It did discriminate based on race.
That was the mindset back then in Austrian Germany in the 30s, yes.
May I ask you, was there any type of groups that where the parents would say, we don't want our kids, you know, to join up on this here organization where we, you know, we're going to boycott, you know, for example, a religious organization would say, we don't want our kids, into this Hitler worship down in this type of way.
Well, there was, before the Hitler Youth, there was a group called the Catholic Quickborns. And prior, there were a number of groups throughout Germany and Austria, and all these groups were brought together and put under the Hitler Youth and the Bund Deutsche Mädel. And I also explain that in the back part of my book.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, thanks, Russ. Okay, let's take Jim in Kansas. Jim?
Jim in Kansas?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. On page 58 through 61 of your book, The Ruling Elite, Death, Destruction, and Domination, because of the banking system that was putting people back to work without inflation, that needs to be worked into every conversation that you have on talk radio. That's the most profound stuff that I have ever read about the origins of World War II. And then if you go about the origins of war, you need to get this Edward the Seventh in there. And I'll shut up and let somebody else talk.
I was just wanted to mention to him, if he wanted to email me at webmaster@bdmhistory.com, he can always send that information over to me. But my focus is on my mother in the book.
Sure.
And what she learned on. But yes, I did touch about the in one of the chapters there about how when Hitler took over Germany and into Austria, and how the economics changed in the country, and my mom went from being poverty stricken, and the landlord threw her my grandmother out of the house because she couldn't pay the rent, because her husband had passed away, and she ended up having to give him a cow and then some chickens, and that's how she was paying the rent. And then he said, well, you got five kids and you can't pay the rent, out you go. So my grandmother was walking down the street with a wooden wheelbarrow full of their belongings and five kids hanging on to her. And because Dante Nita told me that story, and my Uncle Franz, he was still too young to really remember, but Dante Nita was a little bit older than my mom. And so Frau Brauer down the street saw my grandmother and said, come on in, you know, let me, you live here and live in the barn and help me around the house, and your kids can work here. And that was the village, everybody helping each other out. So that once when Austria was annexed into Germany, my grandmother received 1,000 Reichsmarks, which was, I don't know how much it would convert into today's dollars, probably like 10 grand or something. But that gave her the money to buy a house, buy the property, start building her house, get clothes for the kids, buy a bicycle for my uncle. And that he remembered because he got himself a brand new bicycle. And he's like, we have our own house now, and we're doing good. We got food on the table. So, I mean, the entire economy changed in Austria. It seemed like my uncle told me practically overnight things changed.
Indeed. That is amazing. And that is why they wanted to be annexed, why they voted to be annexed.
Yes, because Germany was doing so much, so well for themselves after Hitler came into power in 1933, and the economy was rising. It was so much better, and people were working, and he reawakened industry. He got the factories going. Everybody had work. They were building the Autobahn, and he said, I want a car for the people that's inexpensive, reliable, and good on gas, and that everybody can afford. So he made the Volkswagen. The Volkswagen is the people's car.
That was my very first car, is a Volkswagen.
Oh, I rebuilt the Volkswagen, yes. I rebuilt it. I took the engine out. I made it into a little Baja bug. It took me 5 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I have pictures. I got to post them on Facebook, but yeah.
Oh, so, I loved my little Volkswagen.
Yeah, they were great cars. They still are. Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so getting back to the girls, they learned all these things, and they learned about nutrition, and they just learned everything they needed to know. Did they also learn how to break down Volkswagen, you think?
No. Yeah, no, they learned. Actually, I'm gonna just tell you a quick story here. When I was 9 years old, we had to change the faucet in the kitchen wasn't working. And so my mom said, okay, get underneath the sink. I'm going to teach you at 9 years old how to change the faucet. And so my head's underneath the sink. And she said, okay, do this. And she started telling me. And I'm like, well, Mom, how do you know how to do this? She said, never mind. I know how to do it. Just do it. I think she was reading the directions, you know, that come with when you buy a faucet. There's directions there. But I never heard a piece of paper or nothing. And at 9 years old, the first thing I remember doing was changing the faucet in the kitchen sink. And I was very proud of myself.
That is just amazing, really.
Isn't that crazy? So, yeah, I mean, they learn. But, see, this is the things that they learned back then. And, you know, I was 9 years old. My mom was in her 30s, maybe early 40s, I don't know. But, I mean, that's what she instilled on to me. Here, I'm going to teach you. Let's go have some fun. I'm going to teach you how to do this. So it wasn't ever work. Go in there and clean your room. It was like, hey, you want some clean clothes to wear tomorrow? You know, let's get this organized.
Sure. If parents teach their children how to weed in the garden like she did when you were four.
Yeah.
It was just something that came automatically to her you to be independent.
And also keep in mind that the parents, women, the parents, there's not a lot of women like me that I've run into who know how to do plumbing work, how to, you know, take the toilet off and change the wax seal or replace the guts. Or fix the stove when it breaks, or how to change. My husband got really mad at me one time because he came home and I said, I got a present for you. He said, what did you do? I said, well, I put new pads on your car.
Brake pads?
He did what? I put the new brake pads on his car. And he said, why'd you do that for? I said, well, because I can and I wanted to. And I just took the book out and read how to do it and did it. I took the car to the mechanic and had him check it out. He goes, did my wife do a good job? He said, absolutely.
Oh, how funny. Oh, that must have been intimidating, though. Seriously.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, and so, I mean, I got to be careful, you know what I'm saying? But it's like there's not... I've run into some women who are very, very independent. I mean, more so to the point where they have these skills that really intimidate men because men don't know how to do it.
Sure.
And I'm not putting them down. Please don't get me wrong or anything. It's that's the way I was brought up, to be totally independent, totally self-sufficient. I've been single for 20 years. And I've learned how to deal with all of everything that has come my way that I can survive. I'm not dependent upon a man and his paycheck. I'm fine myself because I make my own money, I do my own thing, and I'm not saying I'm rich, that's far from it, but I'm independent in the sense that I know how to take care of myself. And I talked to some guys over on the phone or through Facebook, and we have conversations, and it's nice that they can open up and share what's going on in their lives with me, because they don't understand why it is the way it is in their relationships. And so I ask them, you know, are their wives or their girlfriends or their partners, you know, first of all, do they have high self-esteem? You know, can they do
and
things on their
don't.
Own?
A lot
and
of
they
people don't.
Right. Oh, yeah.
We do have a couple of callers.
Oh, okay.
Oh, we have three callers. Okay. John in Arlington. John?
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
There's a new series coming out in the, there's a new series on the Hero Channel on cable. It's called, Hitler's, it's called Hitler's Empire Post-War. And it claims that, they were, it claims that, no, it was talking about the German Bunds in the United States, in one of them. And it claims that, first of all, that there was a, that these Bunds are, you know, these, sort of copies of German Nazi organizations in, Germany were subversive and that they were part of a plan to overthrow the government of the United States by Nazi Germany.
That's so silly. I can't believe it. Well, if it's on commercial television, I think it's very, I would be very skeptical.
You would be skeptical.
Yes.
Well, anyway,
so what channel is it on?
It's on the Hero Channel. It's, I think it's like, 259 cable.
I don't even know it.
Okay.
I watch the History Channel.
The government of Germany never had any intention of taking over the government in the United States. It's just not credible.
What, ma'am, why is this claim or this myth, if you want to call it, that persists 70 years into the future?
Because people have written books making that claim. And you have to look at, you have to, what, to read some accurate history. Read some books on accurate history.
All right, I understand, but, what did her mother believe about the political situation and what was really going on with the conflict that was being manufactured?
Well, my mom wasn't in educated so much in the political point of view because she was in the Bund Deutsche Mädel, and that was to teach them the home economics, teach them, give them the practical skills so that they can become mothers or move into their chosen vocations. So when my mother left the country service year camp and went back to Kleinzell, she got a job in Mariazell, and then within, she started working right away in a hotel, and then the Russians came through, so she was never, and she had no political indoctrination.
Okay. Well, thank you, John. We do need to move on, because we're running out of time.
Okay.
But thank you.
Okay,
let's take John in Arkansas. John?
Yeah, let's talk about those evil Germans for a second here. You know, this country wouldn't gotten where it is if it wasn't for German technology. As a matter of fact, what's your problem with Wolfgang Albert?
That has absolutely nothing whatsoever. He was Polish.
He
told me that he was Polish, okay? And it has nothing to do with her book, so thank you for your call. Okay, let's take Jerry in Chicago.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call. I first heard you about 4 years ago when Deanna had a weekday show. And I had called in and told you about my girlfriend's mother who was in the Hitler Youth Brigade or Association, whatever you call it. And all that they learned, and I couldn't believe it when she told me this, but it's not just what Hitler taught. I want to say the Austrian people, because my grandmother on my mother's side, she raised her four sisters at the age of 17 when both of her parents were deceased. And she would not give them up to the state or the government or anything else like that. And she took whatever job she could. And then she raised my mother and two of her brothers. And after her husband died at an early age, my mom's father. And she did the best she could, and she would never give in. They were hardworking people. I think this is something in the bloodline.
Yes, and growing up with the European values, the mindset, because my mother worked very hard. Her mother worked very hard. What I noticed is that the European people that I've become friends with, they have very strong work ethics. They value their family.
Well, thank you. Okay. That's all I wanted to add. Have a great weekend. I love you. Bye.
Thank you for sharing.
All righty. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Okay.
And our guest today has been Cynthia A. Sandor, and she has this wonderful book. It is Through Innocent Eyes, The Chosen Girls of the Hitler Youth. Her websites are cynthiaasandor.com and bdmhistory.com. And she does have a Facebook, and she's under there as author Cynthia A. Sandor. So, appreciate those phone calls. And I remember Jerry calling in. And it's been about 4 years ago. And, yes.
Amazing.
So, while Germany
Freedom
was...
also. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Germany was doing very well. Meanwhile, America was in a Great Depression. And I did a side-by-side comparison of what Hitler was doing compared to what Roosevelt was doing. Mm-hmm. And it was totally different. It's in my book. Anyway, so tell us a little bit more. We've just got 2 minutes. Tell us what you would like us to know. You've got a presentation. You're going to be at the Kentucky Expo Center in Louisville, Kentucky, February 22nd through the 25th. So tell us what you'll be doing there. And also,
it's an absolutely very, very large military show. And I'm going to be in the where the author section is. And I will also be there with Professor Steve Nichols. And he wrote the book... War Generation. I can't believe I forgot the name of his book. Anyway, we're going to both be over there together. And German War Letters from 1939 to 1945. And so we're going to be there, and there's going to be a few other authors over there. And it's a very, very large event, and there's thousands of artifacts from military artifacts that are there, and I would recommend anyone who's in the area if they can stop on by, and you know, not just to come over to see the authors, but to see what the other vendors have to show. And some of them have some very nice items from the period.
And on March 3rd and 4th, you're going to be at the Dade Battlefield Historic Park in Bushnell, Florida?
Yes, that's another event that I attend that annually, and that is it's a smaller World War II reenactment that is done, and it's put on by the Dade Battlefield Society. It's a wonderful family event to attend, and they have vendors there, and they have food, and they do a living history battle event in the park, and they do have some music there, and it's nice. It's a nice event.
Well, it was just terrific having you on the program, and I hope you have a great time at those two events, and I hope people will attend, and I hope that people will purchase your book. It's a wonderful
book.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you.
Email me at webmaster@bdmhistory, and I'll give them 20% off.
Thank you. That's great. That's very nice.
Thank you. Dana, it was a pleasure speaking with you.
As always, absolutely. I love talking with you. Okay, take care.
You too now.
All righty. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners.